Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and the thought of getting on Tinder again right now makes my very soul shudder in the depths of my heart, you know? That's just how I feel. Who are you?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and porn person, and I, in a fit of depression, gave Tinder some money a couple weeks ago so that it would let me keep swiping forever, because that's just a nice little well to fall into in your depths of loneliness, you know?
Yeah, it really is wild how gamified that interface is, and it's, I feel like it's probably not great for people who have obsessive tendencies. No, I know this because, like, I have obsessive tendencies and have had my own share of problems with that. Was it worth the money, you feel?
No, not at all. No, it was literally, it popped up with the, like, well, that was your last swipe. You can put this app away and go deal with your life or pay us $20. And I was like, shit, I have $20. to not address my life for another few hours, gladly. Here you go.
I think the only time I ever gave Tinder money was because I accidentally swiped past someone who I recognized, who I had had a crush on years previous. And I was like, oh my God, I missed them. And then you have to pay extra for that rewind feature. And I did. And then they like didn't even match with me. So it didn't even matter.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I have so rarely paid dating apps. I have occasionally, and a few times during the pandemic, because really it feels like the only way to, like, meet new folks. And I'm realizing how much I enjoy meeting new folks. Like, I was just talking to one of my coworkers about how much we miss single-serving friends. Because, like, there's just, I don't know, a special kind of fun about that, about someone who you will gladly spend, like, the rest of that evening, you know, hanging out, drinking, talking, whatever, with. And then you have no need to hang out with again. You don't. They are lovely for this experience.
Yeah, sometimes when you add people like that on social media, you later find out something terrible about them, which is just, like, the nature of befriending people outside of, like, our sex-positive feminist bubble, I feel like. Like, when I've met people at, like, random performances or whatever, then, like, months later, they would turn out to be, like, slut shamers or, like, rape apologists. It's like, cool. I've bad friend dar, I guess.
I don't know. I've just thought about all, like, the queers that I've met in, like, bars and things and had, I don't know, it's just weird evenings, like, sitting on a rooftop talking about shit and drinking, and then just, I don't know, floated back out of each other's lives. And, like, yeah, that is an experience that I miss after a year of just not incidentally meeting people, not texting people who I don't know super well, and getting that, like, flutter of dopamine and nervousness because, oh, they text me back. Oh, what are they gonna say? Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like casual, spontaneous socializing that we've not had access to this year. And it makes me think of that book, Because Internet, is that what it's called? Where I forget her name, the author of that book, but she talks about
Gretchen McCulloch.
There you go. She talks about how social media is like the hallway at school. Like, it's like a casual place where you run into people and can socialize in this spontaneous way. And it's true, but, like, I don't really, it's just not the same vibe. Spending that much time on Twitter is, like, not as good for my brain as, like, walking down a hallway full of cool queers, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, the difference being, like, I don't know. This is a thing I've been thinking about a lot lately, because I've been getting a lot of my social time has been spent on Twitter, right? That is the extent of my socializing these days. And it's not, like, I'm finding myself turning to it because it is giving me these drops in this socializing bucket, right? These little bits and drips and drabs of dopamine, which feel astronomical because that bucket is fucking empty. So anything next to empty feels like a lot, but it's draining just as fast as it's filling, right? Because it, I mean, I cannot be fully candid in 280 characters. Anything I say on Twitter is said to everyone, not just the person I'm talking to. So I can't have the kind of conversations I would have in a school hallway in hushed voices, like, curled against my locker, being like, oh my god, did you see what he was wearing today? Like, all of that, like, little casual intimacy that you would get from that. Mm-hmm. Because I can just scroll Twitter and not even be perceived if I don't want to be. And unless I, like, I will pick that option over being perceived any day of the week. It's not healthy for me, but I will pick it when it is available to me. And that's part of the problem I'm finding in Twitter. And I'm trying to move to, like, I'm trying to reach out to folks again, and I'm trying to move, like, I've tried dating apps, but I'm running into the same problem I ran into when we were not in quarantine, which is I don't do well at getting to know people when we're not in person. I need to, like, feel their energy, which sounds more woo than I mean it to. But there is
I know what you mean.
Yeah, there is a, I can just understand and sense people's state and what they need and what's going on, and my charm works a hell of a lot better in person. Like, the number of times I've been like, yeah, this doesn't work over the phone, get me in a room with people and they'll like me, but I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel like one way that I learned that about myself, like, that I really needed to hang out with someone in person in order to, like, understand their vibe and, like, whether we were vibing, is, like, I dated someone who had dyslexia. And so the way that he texted was very, like, not, you know, grammatically correct all the time, and, like, not always, like, spelled correctly and weird syntax and stuff. And I had used to feel pretty strongly that, like, I needed to only date people who, like, wrote very well, because, like, I'm very verbally minded, I'm a writer, I'm really into, like, sexting and dirty talk, and just, like, that felt important to me. But then, like, in person, like, he was super, super smart and, like, you know, not the way that I had assumed he would be based on those texts, with, like, an ableist assumption I was making. And yeah, sometimes you just really can't read what someone is like until you're in the room with them. And I have to remind myself of that when I, you know, don't feel like going out with somebody or meeting up with somebody, because sometimes you just gotta make yourself do it, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree. I have, and something I've been noticing a lot over these years, over this year as well, is just how exhausting sometimes it is for me. Like, I don't have dyslexia. I do have ADHD, as I've mentioned. And it can be so exhausting getting a thought out of my head and onto paper. Simply because my, like, my hand is so much slower than my brain. And just trying to type out all of the ideas I have, I'm gonna super censor myself to save time, and because my spelling isn't great, like, I sometimes even spell check is like, bro, I don't know what the fuck you're trying to, I don't,
yeah,
no fucking clue. So my spoken vocabulary is way larger than my written vocabulary, and if to use a word, I need to run to Google or and, like, Google a sentence it might come into, so that Google will tell me how to spell it, because all my guesses are too wrong, and then come back to the sentence. I'm just not going to use that word, and I'm just going to be constantly, like, whittling away at what I want to say, because I have to type it and practically put it in a way that makes sense, versus having a conversation face-to-face with someone and being able to watch their face and see, ah, do you understand what I'm saying, or do I need to lean more into this, like, explanation period, or are you getting it, and can I, like, dig deeper into, like, the interesting stuff that I'm digging into here? And I get none of that feedback in written stuff, and it's so frustrating.
Yep.
So anyway, all of that is to say, I have been thinking a lot about, as I mentioned last week, I got recently vaccinated, or at least my first shot, and I'm working my way towards my second. Be fully vaccinated by 420, because the universe has a sense of humor. And I've been thinking a lot about what dating looks like now, right? Because we've talked a lot about what COVID did to dating during the year we were living in the depth of it. Years felt like years. I don't know. During the year we were living in the depths of it, right? What is it like to date during it? And I think, I would say I think most of us have been disabused of the notion that things will go back to normal. But honestly, I do think there are still quite a few people out there who are like, great, I get these shots. And then just, I don't know, we just go back to dating and go back to parties and hanging out and life as usual. And like, that's, I think a great many of us are aware that things are going to be quite different. And things like dating and parties may look quite different for longer than, I don't know, we might scientifically be required to, right? I can probably safely be in a room full of, you know, however many people, I don't know the science, but, you know, I could, at whatever point when I am fully vaccinated, there are a great many things that will be safe to me that do not feel safe to me. And I thought it would be really interesting to explore what dating looks like in an environment like that. So I guess a really great starting point would be to kind of talk about what dating looked like for you, kind of like right before and at the beginning of the pandemic. Like, what was the dating life you had going into this? And what has it looked like during the pandemic for you?
Yeah, I was not really actively dating pre-pandemic. I still had dating apps on my phone, and I would look at them occasionally. So I was sort of, like, open to it theoretically, but I was not putting energy into it because I had my now spouse, and I also had a friend with benefits who I would see sometimes, and it was just sort of, I don't know, that as an introvert with a chronic illness, I was kind of, like, topped out. And
sorry, what? Topped out as in your schedule was full, but also topped out as in you had too many tops in your life.
Anyway, I was top saturated, exactly.
I was done with tops. There were just too many. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, and I think like the dating apps being on my phone piece is like kind of important for me because like probably my favorite thing about like non-monogamy in general, other than the big philosophical things like freedom and autonomy, is like the rush of exciting energy when you're flirting with someone new, like you were just talking about. So I think that the apps like gave me that when I wanted it or when my energy was kind of flagging, and like that felt like the right thing to boost it. But during the pandemic, it's just been so exhausting to even think about that, like particularly since I have multiple friends who have like had people on dating apps try to meet up with them super soon or like try to eschew like all the safety measures that they were wanting to take or like being, you know, making fun of them for wanting to wear masks on dates and stuff. And it's just, I don't want to risk it. I mean, like even in regular life when you're not in a pandemic, there's always the risk that you'll show up and the person will turn out to be like an anti-feminist or like an anti-vaxxer or a murderer. And it's like,
I love that you put those all on the same tier.
I feel like it's a spectrum. It's a pipeline.
Just like, you know, they might be an anti-vaxxer or a murderer, you know.
But like now you don't know, or like during the pandemic and now as well as it's starting to ease up, like we don't know when you show up, is the person going to turn out to like not want to wear masks or not, you know, like are they going to be a plandemic conspiracy theorist? Like I just feel like there's so many more landmines that you can step on right now, and the thought of like trying to filter for that is just really exhausting for me. What about you?
I think I've talked about this. Going into the pandemic, I had like recently just had top surgery, was like in a body that felt good to me for the first time in like a minute. Was in a place where I felt like I like fully understood my gender and understood what felt good in my body for the first time in a minute, right? Gender is still a thing I think about, obviously, but it is backgroundized. It is not the biggest question in my life anymore. So I was very much at a point where I was feeling pretty confident in myself, in, you know, my gender and outside of that, and in who I was, and was very excited to be dating in a way that I felt much more prepared for it than I ever had in the past. So I had been starting, I was looking back at my March calendar, recently, my March 2020 calendar, and I had, like, several first dates in the next couple of weeks, right after things kind of shut down, and I had been meeting folks at events and at conferences and things like that, and I had a couple of folks that I was, like, excitedly talking to and excited to kind of, I guess, rediscover dating in as much as, I guess, it, with the person that I was bringing to dating now, like, I felt like a person who was much more prepared and understood much more who I was and who I was bringing to the table and what I was also looking for. None of those dates happened, as you might imagine. And throughout the pandemic, I haven't been dating a ton, quite predictably given everything we said thus far. I have tried several times dating apps because, just like you were talking about, one of the things that is so, so valuable to me about being poly is that flirty, new, exciting energy, right? I ordered a custom from a sex worker in the past couple of weeks, and anytime she messaged me about it, I was like, oh my god, look at that, and oh, and like, I would look at that and be like, wow, I don't remember feeling that way recently, like, in a long time. And I was a person who always had crushes on people, who loved, like, I don't know, wondering about what would happen next time I see them, and like, I don't know, what do they think I'm cute? Oh gosh, like, oh. You know, sending flirty texts and that sort of thing. And I take all of that energy and, like, it's super fun for the relationships that are just starting out and for, like, the new sex I get to have with those people. And all of that energy brings me back to my partner and is like, oh, hey, like, I want to fuck you too. And like, oh, this is really hot and fun. And like, can I tell you about this cute flirty thing? Because it makes me feel desirable and desired. And I adore my partner. And 90% of the time, they want to fuck me because they are a slut who is deeply in love with me. And the same is true for me, right? However, it is much less likely to give me that, like, a shocking little electric thrill of, like, my partner wants to fuck me? Really? Are they flirting with me? Because, like, they want to, I can confidently say they want to fuck me right now. I'm not entirely sure where they are or what they're doing, but it's probably true in this exact second.
Somewhere out there, Ash just, like, saw the bat signal in the sky and was just like, I'll be right there.
And I'm such a nerd because I said that and I was like, in this second that I'm recording it, but also in this second that they are listening to it. Which is a different second, but they will want to be fucking me then. And also in whatever second, whatever other listener is listening to this, because this is an asynchronous communication method. Anyway, what I'm saying is my pet is a slut and I adore them. And being wanted by other people, even if it is a stranger who, like, checks me out on the sidewalk when I'm going for a walk, I'm like, oh, look at me go. Look at me being hot. And it just reinfuses all of that energy. I'm like, oh, you want to have sex with me? Sex is a thing that would be fun. You know who will have sex with me? My partner, and they're really hot.
And they're safe because they're in your pod. So it's like,
exactly. That's
a rush in itself. But that makes me want to ask you, like, something I've noticed is that when I'm not feeling, like, totally exhausted by the thought of trying to flirt with people during the pandemic, I am feeling totally the opposite. Like, I feel like I'm much more sensitive to whatever neurotransmitters lead me to want to do that. And I feel like a lot of people are feeling that way right now because, like, anytime I send someone an Instagram message that could be even construed as flirty, I feel like most of the time lately, people are just, like, hopping right on it and, like, flirting really hard back, which, like, maybe has to do with, like, me being a babe a little bit. But, like, I think mostly it is just, like, people are really starved for this kind of thing. And also, I think that we're kind of, like, I really feel like everybody's social skills have kind of atrophied to some extent. We talked about this before, but, like, I notice myself being really socially awkward in interactions with people other than the, like, 4 to 5 people who I talk to regularly. And not being able to read them as well. And we'll be, like, interrupting each other a lot because we can't read each other's rhythms as well and stuff like that. Like, I feel like we're just not used to socializing. And that for me is going to be really interesting to watch how that unfolds when people start dating again.
Yeah, for sure. I'm finding myself in this place where, I don't know, I feel like I'm overthinking which, like, I was already an anxious person. I was already prone to overthinking prior to this. And now, so many of my conversations happen via text, and I'm so used to being able to go over and go over and go over what I say before I say it that I have in-person conversations, and I'm like, hi, hello. And that's even how I feel about, like, I don't know, little texts. Like, I've sent text messages that are like, hi, let's make plans to hang out. And I'm like sitting next to my partner being like, is this how a human talks? Do I sound like an alien? Can I send this?
I do this almost every time I write an important email or an important text. I will show to Matt now and be like, is this okay? Because, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm feeling very similar. I think especially in interactions that are a little bit foreign or new to me, like anything where like it's a professional interaction, but I'm also trying to be friendly has gotten like really hard for me. Cause I feel like that requires a certain level of like casual finesse that I have just sort of let fall by the wayside.
See, I struggle, like, the professional, like, I can do professional and I can even do casual professional, because, like, most of my interactions with professional is fairly casual at this point. Let's be, like, I work in the sex industry, right? Mm-hmm. But I, you know what's interestingly become difficult? Flirting and just casual friendship, like, how to become friends with people. Mm-hmm. And like establish friendship. And I think part of that is also because so much of, like, we talked about Twitter being kind of our go-to for like the school hallway or the town square or like casual interaction right now. And most of my time on Twitter is on sex work Twitter at Billy Lore, if you want to see my dick, I guess. But most of my interactions and things are on there, which is like, I am flirting with very hot people who I would like to be friends with and also do filthy, filthy things to. And I am a sex worker, so that is networking and my job.
Right.
Which is interesting because, like, there's part of me who, like, sends these filthy things and they're like, oh my god, thanks. And I'm like, okay, but, like, actually, though, hi.
You need an emoji that means I'm not just saying this. Right. I actually mean it.
Right, exactly. You know, and then and they'll like it, and I'm like, no, no, but really though, I want your dick though. Hi. But it has left me like in interactions where I'm not like, and the other side of that, right, is like, okay, is this networking? Is this flirting? Is this friendship? Whatever. The other thing is when you're doing that in sex work, the things you're throwing those questions around are like, you know, God, I would love to have your cock in my mouth. And you're like, I don't know, is this flirting or networking? I'm not. And then I go on Tinder and people are like, hi, hello. And I'm like, hello, good sir. How is your day going? I don't.
Yeah, code switching. You can't be like, I mean, I guess you could like say, I want your dick in my mouth. I feel like it would be a bit intense right now.
right. And then, like, the big question underneath all of this is I am also navigating this in a body that is passing as male more and more frequently than it ever did before. And, like, behaviors shouldn't, like, aren't necessarily gendered. And anyone can act in, you know, the ways that feel good to them and whatever. And if I were to transpose my flirty behaviors from when I was read as a woman onto my body now, that is a very different experience. I am a very different man than those things feel like coming from a woman, right? I genuinely have to look at, like, okay, but this thing that was charming and sweet when I looked like a person who had less power is now baby scary and intimidating and is maybe too forward and is like, I still think of like the first time I was walking home at night behind a femme leaning person and realized I was standing too close and they kept looking over their shoulder and I was being, like, I was nerve-wracking and scary. And it is never a thing that had occurred to me that I was like, oh, maybe I should take the next turn and not be alone on the street with this person because it is stressing them out, right? So calibrating all of those things as well, right? Looking at, is this charming and flirty and, like, because a lot of my flirting behavior is leaning into the fact that I'm, like, hella awkward and not entirely neurotypical and nervous and flustered and don't quite know what to do around really pretty people. And elements of that are cute on all genders, and elements of that get stigmatized differently on men. So learning to calibrate those things while also having all of my interactions be, like, via text has been a trip.
That's really interesting. We should do a whole episode about, like, how dating has changed, like, pre and post transition for you, like, after you've had a bit more, like, post-pandemic dating experience, because I feel like probably you would need to, like, recalibrate in person a bit more before you really know how you totally feel about it.
Yeah, I definitely don't have answers, but it's definitely a thing I've been mulling over in an interesting way, because it is not a thing that, I don't know, people tend, like, going into transition, or I felt a lot like, a lot of the discussion and a lot of my motivation, or at least what I assumed my motivation would be to augment my behavior, was around ideas of passing, right? Oh no, if I act this way, people will be able to read me, will be able to, people will read me as a girl and misgender me and fuck that. And it is interesting moving to a place in my gender where, like, acting femme is just as likely to get me, like, read as a faggot as it is to get me read as a woman. Which, like, poses its own dangers and has its own interesting connotations. And navigating all of that was interesting enough prior to this and is a whole new adventure when I'm not seeing a lot of people in person. We just kind of derailed down the gender path for a minute there, I guess.
That's all right. I'm actually having somewhat parallel thoughts in my own life about how, like, dating is going to be different for me after all this because my chronic illness has gotten so much worse. And it's like, I don't even really know how to date as a person who is in pain pretty much every day and is tired a lot of the time. It's definitely going to be different because, like, how much do you disclose to people? How early do you tell them? Stuff like that. There's a lot of questions, but yeah, I'll get there.
For sure. That does kind of segue into the next thing I kind of wanted to talk about, though. I was curious if your priorities or expectations or goals or plans for dating have evolved coming out of quarantine. Like, what are you looking at your dating life looking like now? Like, do you have any aspirations to start dating when you can go out again?
Well, I think one thing that we have both been doing during the pandemic is working on our mental health and our, like, psychological issues. I've been going to trauma therapy, like, via telephone, of course, and working on some of my, like, super deep-seated childhood shit that has been contributing to, like, problems with polyamory. So I'm nervous about, like, how that's going to change things going forward. Like, it's unclear to me whether I'm, like, ready for, like, dating or if I still need, like, more therapy. And, like, my therapist can't really tell me that. I mean, they're very sort of
just going to sign off on a report card. Ready for dates.
Yeah, I feel like every time I directly ask my therapist for advice, they're just like, you know, I can't tell you that, right? Like, you know, you have to figure that out for yourself. I can't, like, prescribe you.
Okay, but imagine a dating app that a therapist had to sign off on you joining. You just uploaded your, like, therapy permit to date. Anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't really know, like, where I'm at in that stage. I know that or in that process? Because I know that there can be stages like during trauma therapy when it actually like gets worse before it gets better because you're like diving into the stuff. So I don't really know what's going to happen there. We got a listener question that this person was wondering if people post-pandemic will only want to fuck and will not want to date because serious relationships were kind of like one of the major options available to us in the pandemic. Like I saw it happening where people would just sort of decide to either become fuck buddies or like start seriously dating someone because they had to like pod with them in order to safely have sex with them or whatever, which I know is something that you feel is like you don't always entirely know whether you like someone enough to date them if you haven't fucked them. And that listener question really made me reflect on like maybe I will just want like to go on a bunch of now that I'm saying it, I won't.
I can't even make it through the sentence. Definitely.
I started to say that I would want to go on a lot of casual dates. I was like, no, actually, no, not me.
I think the only people that are gonna want to are people who enjoyed that prior to this. I think
And like, if you did enjoy that prior to this, but like only a moderate amount, maybe you'll have a period of like leaning into it more because it's been unavailable. Right. But I don't think that people who were previously not into it are going to suddenly magically get into it unless during the pandemic they reflected and realized that that's, you know, something that they wanted.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly a non-zero number of people who are going to be very excited to get out and fuck as many people as they can when they get out of this, you know? But I think there is going to also be a number of people who have been emotionally isolated, like not just socially, but emotionally isolated for a very long time, and who are going to come out of this looking to dive headlong into serious relationships in a way that may be equally inadvisable depending on the person. So I think, like, sure, there will be a great many people who have been deprived of something for a great many months and are going to dive headfirst in that direction and, you know, gorge on all the chocolate they can find or whatever that looks like. You know what I mean? Like, get the weird food metaphor that I don't know how I feel about, but, you know, not sure how I feel about the implications of that, but you know what I mean, right? Like, that will feel deprived of something and are going to go way overboard and wind up with a tummy ache and possibly hurting other people along the way. But I think there are certainly a great many people who have also just taken this time to reflect and are coming out of this with a better idea of what they're looking for out of sex and dating. Which is certainly something I feel like I've experienced over these past couple of months.
Yeah, what are you thinking in that area?
Yeah, I mean, so I have not really dated during the pandemic, right? Outside of, like, my partner. I've talked to a few people. I have, like, shared one text every few months with a couple of the people I was flirting with before this. It feels so, like, I am very eager to get some of that flirty energy in. I deeply miss it. I'm very eager to start, like, casually or not so casually dating again, whatever that looks like. I don't know. I'm excited to start meeting people again and having crushes on people again and seeing what happens to them and being curious about the relationships in my life again. And this sense of, like, mystery and adventure that comes with people that you don't know. And at the same time, for me, one of the things I've learned during this quarantine is a lot about being comfortable being alone with myself, being comfortable... I used busyness as I'm rereading Brené Brown, but
always a good idea.
Yeah, honestly. But I use busyness as a numbing strategy a lot, and you can read more of her work for more information on that. But I keep myself way too busy with people and things happening outside of my life so that I do not have to think about the things happening inside my life or reflect on the things that I'm noticing, because that's hard and scary. So while I am very eager to, like, get out and be meeting people again and having interactions and all this exciting energy, I feel less desperate for it than I used to. I feel way more comfortable looking at a person and being like, you don't need to like me. I don't need to be able to spend time with you. I don't need to, I will meet someone. And I think part of that is also, like, as much time as I've spent with my partner and getting all sappy or whatever. But, like, they're great and really good for me and really accept and understand me as the person that I am. And, like, I'm less inclined to compromise than I used to be. I'm less, like, I'm like, no, I'll just spend my night alone. I don't need to, I'm just gonna be like this. And if you don't like that, then we don't have to spend time together. I'm quite comfortable on my own in a way that I wasn't before, which is comforting.
I very deeply feel all of that. Yeah. I've spent the majority of the pandemic with my spouse, who is so wonderful and treats me so well and takes such good care of me. And it definitely, in some sense, has, like, raised my standards in terms of moving forward. Like, I'm just like, why would I mean, I know that this is, it is definitely a privilege to have a partner who treats you that well. And you know that when I was single, I would, like, get a bit frustrated with my friends who were non-monogamous, who were in a super happy, healthy relationship already. And were just like, I don't know, I just can't meet new people, and, like, complaining about it and stuff. Cause I was like, whatever, like, you already have a great relationship. But, like, so that's definitely something to keep in mind. But yeah, I mean, I would so much rather just, like, be alone for the evening than be with somebody who I find boring, or who finds me boring, or who doesn't make me laugh, or who doesn't treat me well, or who is an anti-vaxxer, an anti-feminist, or a murderer. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. There are so many people in my life currently, and people that I can, like, I don't know if this is true for you as well, but there are quite a few people who were incidental people in my life prior to this, who were side characters, special guest stars, people I saw on, like, rare occasion, that I have thought of so much more than I expected to during this, where I'm just like, what, like, that person's, like, really clever. Wow, I wish I spent more time with that person. Wow, I wish I had more opportunities to talk to that person. And generally, I didn't, because they were a person who intimidated me, and they were a person who I really cared if they thought I was cool or not. And I was like, I'll just leave them alone. They can just be cool over there. It's fine. And then I would maintain these relationships with people who were great, seemed fine, but I knew they liked me. Like, I knew for sure that they thought I was really cool. And I'm more inclined to chase those riskier relationships with these people who I'm like, no, they're really fucking, like, I've heard the way they talk and think about things, and, like, they're really brilliant, and I really admire them, and I think they're amazing. And rather than putting these people up on pedestals, I'm more inclined to pursue relationships with them, whether it's romantic or casual or whatever, and spend time with those people rather than just spending time in the relationships that feel, I want to say the word safe, which is not,
I know what you mean. The word, like, I mean, like, yeah, non-risky.
Exactly. Safe in the boring way, I guess. Yeah. Right? Not in the comfortable way, right? Because I feel very safe in my relationship with my partner and my pet. And we take a lot of risks, and we do things that are scary, and I feel pushed by that, and I feel challenged by that relationship, and I feel like it encourages me to grow in ways that are safe. And that's the energy I want to spend more time seeking out when we are able to.
For sure. Another listener question I have is from someone who just wrote, how to find the energy, ? I feel you. I think, I mean, I'm a special case because I do have, like, chronic fatigue, but I think a lot of people are feeling this way. Like, our lives have just changed and our energy thresholds are different. And, you know, the hectic nature of everyday life at other times may not be the same at all as your life during the pandemic. So, I mean, I think my main tip here is just going to be, like, ease into it. Like, don't plan a bunch of shit in one day, even if you easily could do that pre-pandemic. Like, tiptoe into it, make one plan, and then plan to rest for the rest of the day if you can, or see people on video chat before you see them in person, or hang out with one friend instead of hanging out with four friends, even if they're all vaccinated and it's all safe. I think it's very easy to overwhelm yourself, and that's going to discourage you from socializing as much as you may like to.
Yeah, agreed. I think do not have pre-pandemic expectations for your ability to socialize.
Yeah.
This might be a little bit of an offshoot, a bit of a tangent from this, but I do think it's helpful because this is something I've realized a lot in myself. Like, I've been spending a lot of time being like, all right, well, I am working my way out of quarantine. How am I different from how I was when I was working my way into quarantine? What did my goals look like then when, like, I was looking into my future and seeing an indefinite amount of alone time? That felt very different than it did now. I remember, like, being hopeful about things, being like, I'm going to have so much time to do all of these things and having all these ideas. And now, so many of those things, even that I was excited to do, feel like items on my to-do list.
Yeah.
I feel like I just get through my list, and then tomorrow happens, and it looks exactly the same, and I just work my way through everything on that list, and then tomorrow happens. And I realized for myself I had become very much in a state of
survival.
Just survival. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just maintaining, just knowing that eventually, like, I just need to get through all of this and figure out how to best take care of myself through this extraordinary circumstance that I am living through, which is entirely reasonable. And I am at the other end of it, and my brain doesn't quite know that yet, right? It's still looking at all of the things on my list and seeing them in this state of survival. And in my own life, a lot has changed over the past year. I have, like, achieved a lot. I'm doing fairly okay, and I know this is not true for, you know, everyone coming out of the pandemic, but I am coming out of it in a somewhat more stable place than I went into it, both emotionally and just practically, right? I have a new place that I'm living in and all these things. So I swear this does come back around to energy because part of where, like, I was looking back at these times earlier in the pandemic and the days that I had, like, I would look at my calendar and I would leave the house and not be home for 12, 16, 18 hours, sleep, and then do it all again the next day, you know, with just all my stuff loaded up in my backpack and my list of all the events I was going to through the day. Mm-hmm. And that is wild to me. That is absolutely absurd. So when I was reflecting on how I was able to do that, a lot of it was momentum. So I am practicing, A, kind of shifting myself into a state where, like, how do I tap into that momentum and how do I plan things in a way that I'm not exhausting myself, but that I can keep riding that momentum out. And the other thing that I have done, which, again, this is maybe more personal for me, but I am going through that list of everything that feels like to-do items and taking some time to remind myself why I am doing them and also asking myself if I have to do them, right? Things like sex work stuff, which is a hobby for me. It is my art. It is the thing, like, yes, it makes me money. And primarily right now I am lucky enough that it is my creative outlet and my art and all of that. And when that starts to feel like a chore, I can step away from it. And I wasn't doing that before. So just reframing some of the things that were exhausting to me before and looking at it and being like, okay, well, if it feels exhausting, don't do it. Or remember that you're doing it because it fuels you in these ways and serves these needs and these goals that are deeply important to you and maybe feel good about doing it. And this is the kind of bullshit that I would have rolled my eyes at for a while. And I have been doing it for 3 weeks and I have so much energy, you guys. Like, yes, it's also springtime outside and there is that like touch of springtime hypomania that I always get, which is also, I think, part of why everyone's like hella horny right now too. And I'm okay with it. people being out of pocket and flirty as hell. And I am here for it. So yes, all of that energy is also helpful. But I do think being really conscious about where I'm spending my energy and also intentional about how I contextualize the expenditure of that energy, how I'm thinking about it. Am I thinking about, I'm going to drag my lazy ass into doing this thing I don't want to do and force myself to do it? Or am I thinking, wow, I have some free time to knock out that thing that is important to me for these reasons. Let me pour some energy into it. And I have found the latter has allowed me to complete more. And it is not a mindset that is always super accessible to me. It is not always a thing I am able to do, but when I am, it's been helping. So I guess there's that.
Yeah, all good stuff. I also think in terms of like going on dates and like managing your energy, we're big fans of meta communication, and I think that that's going to be a really helpful tool for a lot of folks right now. Like, even if you think it's obvious, even if you think everybody feels this way, you can just be like, I'm still like reeling from the pandemic. Like, my energy levels are still flagging, or like I might be kind of socially awkward, or like I might want to duck out earlier than I otherwise would. Like, it's okay to say that. And if someone's not cool with that, I mean, they're an asshole. Like, we've all been through this global trauma. Like, they should be cool with that.
Right. And you can plan around that. I think one of the other questions we had in our listener questions, and I actually had one as well, is like, what do even date ideas look like, right? Mm-hmm. And you can plan for things that feel less draining to you. Like, I don't know. A movie as a first date is kind of a go-to. And I know a lot of people don't love it because it's like, well, you just sit and watch this thing together for a while and then never get a chance to talk. And I think what's interesting is that, like, that was typically a thing that happened at movie theaters. Not so much an option these days. And like a cozy night on a couch watching a movie with someone I know where I can pause it if things happen that we want to talk about, or no one is going to come in and like kick us out of their couch because the next movie's got to run, right? It is a much more comfortable first date, but I personally love having movies or TV shows or like plans that we're watching of something to watch, because it gives you something to talk about. And it also gives you long stretches of sharing space without having to necessarily have your extrovert hat on, which could be moments of rest in between hanging out. I mean, a TV show even better than a movie, right? Because you have 45 minutes of a show or a half hour of a show, and then you sit and talk for 15, 20 minutes, and then you can put the other thing back on. And for me, it just gives me that second of a breather where it's like, oh, I'm not expected to be the most entertaining thing in this room, which is, you know, possibly speaking to my own baggage instead of everyone else's, but may also be helpful for you.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And it's also important to pay attention to your own like energy levels through the day and your own kind of like patterns. This is something I've had to pick up as a skill, like since becoming really chronically fatigued a lot of the time. But I think anybody can benefit from this. Like, if you know that, like, there's always those people on Tinder who are like, let's go for drinks at 10 p.m. And I'm like, no. Like, I understand that there are some people whose brains that works for. Maybe 10 p.m. is the time when they feel most socially lively and energetic or whatever. But that's just not going to work for me. I'm going to be an hour into that date, if not less, and feeling exhausted and just not being my most charming self. So post-pandemic dating, like for me, I think I'd be really into like a morning or afternoon coffee on a weekend. Gives me a lot of time to rest up before and after. I also like that because it's not a lot of pressure to like go fuck immediately, but that might be my demisexuality coming out.
Yeah, that's it. I love the two of us. Your dummy ass is like, take me to like a coffee shop mid-afternoon. We'll just talk a little bit. And I'm like, hi, can we lay in your bed and watch movies? How's that sound? No potential for fucking whatsoever. Never gonna happen. It's fine.
Well, one of the listener questions we got, as you mentioned, was about date ideas. And the person specifically asked, like, date options that respect social distancing, which I think is an important consideration right now, because even if both of you are vaccinated, we still don't know all the data about, like, how safe it is to be out in the world. And also, it's likely that not everybody you're going to be trying to go on dates with is vaccinated yet or is fully so. So, yeah, anything outdoors, which is becoming more of an option now if the weather's getting warmer where you are, is a great idea. If you're into supporting your local restaurants, which I am passionate about, a lot of them have really cool, like, takeout meals. Whether you want to do something really simple, like a burger and fries, or want to, like, go the whole hog, like, multi-course fancy meal. And sometimes you can even get, like, wine or cocktails or whatever. And you could take them for, like, a picnic or to sit on a bench in a park or sit outside somebody's house. I also think if you are vaccinated and, like, indoor types of places are starting to open up where you are, I would still feel most comfortable going to a pretty big space where there's a lot of open air. So, like, museums, galleries, that kind of thing. I wouldn't want to sit in a crowded restaurant now, even if I and the person I was with was fully vaxxed. Like, that just feels too aggressive to me. So spacious places, I think, are nice.
Yeah, I agree. Especially given the weather. I mean, for at least folks in the Northern Hemisphere, is going to be getting easier and easier for outdoor dates. And I definitely think that is at least where I'm going to be starting. Yeah.
One thing I've often advocated for as an early in the dating process date idea is, like, going on a walk around a neighborhood that you have a lot of memories in, and kind of just, like, casually talking about different places as you walk by them. I know a lot of people are going on walk dates during the pandemic, and a lot of people are burned out on it. But I think, like, if you have something specific to talk about on the walk, it can be kind of a different experience, like kind of how we've talked about with, like, being in museums and having stuff to comment on. You can just be like, you know, that's the place where I, whatever. I couldn't think of a story that didn't involve either alcohol or clergy members yelling at me to put in that space.
Well, you know, I'm curious. I'm thinking this idea of having something mutually to talk about. Spotify has the ability to share, like, listening sessions. So you could even go to a park or, you know, on a walk or something and listen to an album together or listen to a podcast together in your separate headphones. And similarly, be able to, like, pause it and talk about it and, you know, chat about what you're hearing or whatever and have that single thread of a thing that you're experiencing together and can talk about together so that you're not just kind of sitting there in vacant silence.
This has me thinking about, you know, those 36 questions to fall in love from the New York Times. I'm wondering if I should write, like, a thing that's like that, but for post-pandemic, like, get to know someone and catch up with them really quickly. Like, I would love to have questions like, how did you change over the course of the pandemic? Like, who were you before it and who are you now? Like, what were your hobbies and stuff? I know that some people are, like, pretty burned out on talking about what they've been doing during the pandemic. But I mean, I feel like you kind of do need to kind of get up to speed with this type of thing when you're starting to date someone new right now.
This is also something I've been thinking about, just like I was saying earlier, with all those people that, like, I had just started talking to prior to the pandemic, friendships that I had just started exploring, flirtationships that I had just started exploring. Like, I ain't the person I was a year ago. I'm not gonna, like, be texting every day with someone that I've, like, haven't gone on a first date with yet, but, like, I certainly would like to. And I don't, like, you don't really text and be like, hi, so who are you now? How's that going? Are you irreparably harmed months?
Right? That's the best. I'm just gonna start sending that as an opening message. That's so funny.
just like, so how traumatized are you feeling by the past several months? How's
it going? Who have you become? Yeah. Who have you been reduced to?
Yeah. it's a weird vibe. It is something I think that a great many of us are already probably used to and will be getting more and more used to over the year. And I've said this a great many times over the past year, and I think you've even said this a few times this episode, but it is incredibly helpful to know that at least in this circumstance, everyone else also experienced it. Mm-hmm. They may have experienced it differently than you did. They may have processed it and maybe changed by it differently than you were, but we all experienced fucking something this year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, I think that's it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Dildorks. I hope that you're doing well wherever you are and whatever stage in this like reopening / quote unquote back to normal process you're at. It's a tough time. Be gentle with yourself. I know I say this a lot, but really.
But like you should do it a lot, so.
Yeah. I've been Kate Sloan. I have a sex blog at girlyjuice.net. I write a newsletter at katesloan.substack.com. And also, I launched some porn of me that you can buy if you're into that. Yay. It's all at girlyjuice.net/shop. And there's like pictures of me in lingerie, pictures of me in a strap-on. There's a video of me giving a blowjob. So if you've ever been curious about the skills that I brag about from time to time on this show, there is a video that you can buy of that. It's very nice. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing and information about my workshops at BexTalkSex.com. And if you're interested in hearing me ramble about other sexuality-related things and big thoughts, I have just released another podcast with my day job, Make Love Not Porn, called The Social Sex Revolution. You can find us in Spotify. We are working on getting into Apple Podcasts, so we may be by the time this episode airs, but we are most certainly in Spotify and quite a few other podcatchers, and you can find us by searching The Social Sex Revolution. I am also on Twitter and Instagram at Billy Lore, being naked on the internet and showing off my dick and all those things. So if you want to follow my porn stuff, you can go to at Billy Lore on Twitter and find all my links there. Together, we're the Dildorks. We're the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram and at thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us, brings us up in the charts, makes us easier to find, all that good stuff.
Thank you so much to Protodome, who did our wonderful theme song. Thank you to Amy, who did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye. Someone wanted to sext with me about vor fantasies. And I was like, it was on Instagram. I was like, can you email me, please? Because this is Instagram and I can't talk about that here. And he was like, I don't have email.
What?
And then he wrote, do you have Hangouts? And I'm like, if you have a Hangouts account, you probably have a Gmail.
Oh, my God.
God, people are so weird. Okay.
Okay.